What's going on, everybody? We are back with another episode of Movie Mentors. I'm your host, Jeremy Boros, and today we are talking to an icon of the indie world, the Artios Award-winning casting director, Susan Shopmaker. When it comes to independent filmmaking, it's safe to say that Susan Shopmaker is a household name. With hundreds of projects elevated by her keen and imaginative eye for talent, Susan's work can be seen time and time again in arthouse cinemas and top-tier festivals around the world. From John Cameron Mitchell's Hedwig and the Angry Inch to Andrew Neil's Goat, Eliza Hittman's Beach Rats, and Borderline's After School, Martha Marcy May Marlene, and James White, Susan is always game for discovering new and exciting talent in filmmakers, actors, and storytellers. Plus, she's given some of those famous actors their earliest gigs, and never shies away from first-time filmmakers so long as they have an important story to tell. Speaking of stories, let's get started with Susan Shopmaker. Hello, Susan. It's so wonderful to see you healthy and well on Zoom.
Thank you. Same to you.
Interestingly, I was preparing to talk with you again, and you had an article, an interview you did in Backstage in like 2007. Do you remember this? No. Well, you had a crystal ball because you made some predictions about our profession and the film business and where you think it was going to be. And well, 13 years later, basically it's all come true. You mentioned that commercials were going to be not as lucrative and more like branded content and product placement, more non-union, that indie films were going to be more diverse with less dialogue even, you mentioned, which I think is pretty true. So they play overseas. Now we're in 2020 and we're in this really unique situation. So I thought I'd ask you a tough question of where you think we're headed and how do you think the casting process is going to change in light of COVID?
Well, gee, I don't know. But the one thing I can say is, for instance, yesterday, I guess the protocols for filmmaking came out. There was like a 27-page book or something. And in it, it had casting protocols. And so I think the change is coming about because it has to. And I think some of those protocols included, obviously the 6 feet from everyone. And if you had, and no more in-person casting unless you had to. And therefore, if a producer and a director and a casting director and a reader or whatever needed to be in a room together, they were suggesting either a plexiglass wall between producers and actors, or, you know, in a huge giant space. I mean, it's going to be prohibitive. For many of us, you know, our offices will close. You know, that's the end of an era.
Do you think that's just temporary, though?
I personally think that until there is a vaccine that works, I think it'll be like this for a while. And I'm not confident that there will be a vaccine that works in the next year. I certainly hope there is, but I'm not confident.
Well, plexiglass, just to make actors feel even more like specimen organisms being observed. That's great. But that is problematic, I feel, especially for you, because you have this incredible way about you in the way that you cast, and you've always given actors a lot of time. You've allowed them to even come in and take the sides home after you basically teach them mini acting classes or give them suggestions to work on and come back. And you get so much from that exchange in the few minutes before they start or on their way out. How do you think losing that by not having in-person auditions anymore is going to impact your ability to really find new talent and do your job?
I think it's just going to make it more difficult, but we spent some time about a week ago figuring it out for us, like what's necessary, which is that I will continue to demand auditions and not self-tapes, you know. I not demand them, I can't demand them. But in some ways, it may make it easier for me to meet actors because, for instance, people who are in LA I'm going to request that they no longer send in self-tapes, that the audition experience will continue, albeit it'll be different. It'll be like this. But we figured out, you know, it took me a while because I'm old, but, you know, how to be able to have Jeremy as the actor. I'm up here. Jeremy has a reader. If I want Emily in the studio with me, the virtual studio, she's up here. And we duke it out. We talk about it. We do our thing. And then I only record what I need to record. So the entire thing isn't recorded, just the audition. And then it, you know, as you know from this, you can download it afterwards, and then it's in files and you upload it. You know, you do what you've always done. So, you know, being in the room will be different. I won't have a sense of how someone walks or moves necessarily, but the rest of it, I'm confident.
Yeah. So what you're saying is live auditions on Zoom, not recorded self-tapes.
Yeah, or another platform, you know, however it's going to work out. Yes.
Got it. Got it. Well, that's a relief, actually. That's really nice to know. And so how specifically is your office handling all this downtime?
At the beginning of this, like everyone else, we were scared and nervous and felt like we needed to be proactive. And be proactive the only way we knew how, which was in the community that we live and work in. So I wrote a long letter, a heartfelt letter to all the agents who had been kind to me over the years, both, you know, big agencies and very tiny, tiny ones, and thanking them and saying we would meet any actor they wanted us to meet, no matter what the resume looked like. And so every day for 2 months, 5 days a week, Emily and I have split the lists, and she's met people and I've met people for just a couple of hours a day. And it has been fruitful, you know, to meet a bunch of people I didn't know, or in some cases, people who had sent in self-tapes, but I had no sense of who they were. Some people are based in Europe. Some people are on television shows. I would never meet them. You know, it's run the gamut.
That is such a beautiful, beautiful thing you're doing. I really think it is. For actors, I know how difficult it can be when you're just out of school or, you know, maybe new to the profession or in between agents to feel like you don't have a lot of clout, certainly to reach directly to casting directors and have like generals with them basically was a thing of the past, and you're bringing it back in these circumstances, and it's just so fantastic. You know, here in LA, they've gotten rid of so many of the casting director workshops, which I personally was a fan of. But, you know, that was the one opportunity it felt for unrepresented actors to be able to get a direct channel to casting directors and assistants. And I really commend you for that. I hope more of your colleagues are thinking along the same lines.
Well, I think people are, you know, we can only sit in our homes for so long. I feel like people are doing it. I think at the beginning of this, we were probably the only ones because we did it pretty early on. But I think since then, I think people are doing more of it. I think some people are doing monologues. That's just not my thing. You know, like I don't get that. So, but I think some people are having actors do monologues.
That's cool. That's really cool. Well, not to go gloomy or anything, but right before, you know, all the COVID stuff happened, New York just sort of raised the threshold for their tax incentives, which is obviously going to have a huge impact on indie film in New York, and especially for the kinds of films that you tend to be involved with. What advice would you give to, you know, filmmakers that are trying to make their first features, low budget filmmakers now, given that they just got dealt another blow by the city of New York?
I don't know much about that. I've tried to learn about that at the beginning of all, you know, when it started to happen. I think it's tricky. I guess you still get the tax incentive if you shoot outside of New York City, like outside of a zone. You know, making a gritty New York City movie on a shoestring may be a thing of the past. I mean, I don't know. You know, there are some pundits who've said, well, it's a good thing because the crews, there was too much shooting, and now I want to go, yeah, sure. So I don't know. You know, I don't know how to give anyone advice because I have no clue how it will change. Are people going to have to raise more money? Or these gritty movies are going to take place in towns?
Yeah. changing locations and stuff. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, in terms of when a filmmaker or producer comes to a casting director, maybe for the very first time, they've never worked with one before, aside from having a really good script, what else do you use as a sort of marker of this is someone that has their ducks in a row, this is a professional person that I want to take a chance on?
It is usually with a script. And then, you know, I don't think I have such a, I don't know that I'm as good at figuring out what that is as I'd like to think I am, maybe. You know, in some cases, it's a friend of a friend, or it's a producer with whom I've always wanted to work, or so if the director has made something before, it's a director whose work I admire. When it's people who just show up on the doorstep, I think there's a little bit more, you have to be a bit more discerning because you never know what you're getting into. And for the most part, the office has maintained its integrity. It hasn't, it's not always the case, but for the most part, if that makes any sense. You know, I just think it always usually begins and ends with the script and what the vision of the director is. And
well, just for honestly, some of my friends that are in this situation and have not yet in their careers worked with a casting director, do they just basically cold email you and ask you if, you know, with a log line of what their script is and ask you if you'd like to read it and what your rates are?
That's what people do. I don't talk about money because rates are the rates. You know, it's not, it depends on the budget and it depends on, do they have their money? Do they not have their money? I mean, I think there's more of a standard now in the business. I think casting directors for a long time weren't or hadn't not come together, but hadn't, there was no, how do you want to say it? You know, it's not a union per se. So, I mean, now we're Teamsters, but there was no, okay, it costs this much an hour, it costs this much for, so people were just sort of winging it. And I think now there's just a little bit more of a standard in place. Like, you can't work for free for a year anymore. You know, there are things that have to happen. And much of it is standard, you know, if that makes any sense.
Sure. If the budget is tight for some of these projects, do they offer things like executive producer credits, or how do they sweeten the pot if, you know, they're worried about spending money early on?
You know, the producer stuff is really how much does a casting director, you know, it just, again, it's how much a casting director or me, or I want to be involved in a project. And if I feel like being a producer on it is going to be something I, you know, I want my name on it in that way, then that's a no-brainer. It doesn't sweeten the pot really in terms of, because it doesn't mean anything.
Well, a lot of I think the early filmmakers that work with you, they rely on you in a producer way. Would you say that's true? I mean, you have a reputation of being a nurturing kind of presence, a hard but nurturing presence with projects that you care about, helping people more than just in the casting realm.
Yeah, I think often producers rely on all casting directors to do some of it for them, to advise them and guide them. And with many directors, I've enjoyed that process. But it has to feel right. It isn't just all of them. It's like, do I really feel this movie needs to get made? And then it's a relationship that's just off and running.
Well, you've cast a lot of films and I want to talk about some of them actually. You know, when I go through your IMDb or even read your amazing bio, the ones that pop are, you know, Martha Marcy May Marlene and After School, and you won the Artios Award for Beach Rats recently, and Hedwig and the Angry Inch. I'm just wondering if you could maybe talk about some of those and either challenges you had to overcome or lessons learned or unique anecdotes during the casting or production process with those. For instance, Martha Marcy May Marlene.
Well, you know, I already had a relationship with those guys by that point. So it was a movie that I felt, you know, it was a story I wanted to see get told, and I adored them.
The borderline guys, that is.
So I did a lot for that movie. I made a lot of calls on their behalf and stuck with it and got the cast that I was most proud of. I feel like in that movie in particular has my handprints all over it, but also because it was a relationship that was symbiotic. In other words, my voice was heard as much as Sean's voice was heard. You know, we have a relationship. I cast his second feature, which was in Sundance this winter, called The Nest, which I think is coming out this fall. And again, it was the same kind of relationship. You know, we both knew what he wanted, and the next thing is to go out and help make that happen.
At what point in the casting process did you, and I'm going to credit you with this, even though I was in class with her, so I discovered her, but with Elizabeth Olsen, did she come early on in the process? And of course, you also gave us Julia Gardner in one of her very first parts, and Louisa Krause. I mean, you saw something in all of them.
Yeah. I mean, Elizabeth, you know, I the only reason why I can remember the Elizabeth thing, what was it? Somebody either interviewed me about it or it was written and I saw it recently. I can't remember really, but Elizabeth, I think, had auditioned for us for another project. And we really liked her and we tried to get them to hire her and they didn't. And we remembered her and brought her in for Martha, and it just, she fit the role. I mean, she was the right person for the role. There's no other way to look at it, really. Just even, not just the acting, but the persona and what she comes in with.
Well, that's a great reminder for actors. You know, it's about booking the room and doing a good job on any project. And if you don't get that project, you'll be remembered if you do good work.
I mean, Julia was found at an open call. We gave an open call for a television show called Skins, and she was one of, I think it was 980 people who showed up, and she was wildly memorable, but she was not going to be in Skins. So that's how that happened. You know, you're sitting around going, God, who should this young girl be? And it was like, oh, wait, that's how that happened.
Oh, it's amazing. How about like Hedwig and the Angry Inch? Memories from working on that?
We saw a lot of people, excuse me, it was a different time. So everything was on VHS. So it was a lot of carrying equipment around, because eventually you had to see people pretend to play instruments, if not play them. You know, we went to a sound studio at some point, I think. So it was a crazy wild experience. And again, you're working for somebody who knows what he wants. I mean, the show was already here in New York. It certainly wasn't on Broadway, but it was here. So you understood what you needed. And, you know, Miriam Shore was in the play. I certainly didn't cast Miriam, but I think Michael Pitt. I saw Michael Pitt in a play. He was very young. He was 14 or 15, I think. I feel like he was really young, and remembered him from the play. So I had seen him do a full arc. He was the lead in the play.
Can you talk about After School? Same guys?
Sure, same guys. That was the first experience I had with them. You know, they didn't have any money, and it's a long story, but one of them showed up in my office a lot to get me to cast for them. And the story, if I remember it correctly, is they took me out for a drink one night in the East Village, and I had a couple of drinks and, you know, was feeling very chummy, and they're absolutely adorable, and they were not drinking. And at some point I said, why aren't you drinking? And they said, well, we're not 21. So, so that's how that relationship began. And then it was after that, it was like, oh my God, you're crazy, hilarious geniuses for having done this. And okay.
Wow. So, okay.
So After School was, you know, just auditioning people and then calling in some, you know, I don't want to say calling in favors, but nobody, certainly no one knew who they were. So we called around and said, you must believe, you know, you've got to believe us. This is going to be amazing, you know. And so we got what we wanted.
With some of these actors that I'm going to credit you again with discovering, do you feel that they have a star or idiosyncratic quality that separates people that go on to be very well known in our business versus good actors who maybe work all the time? I guess the real question is, do you believe that star quality is something that can be learned and developed, or you're just gifted with it?
No, There are two different things you're talking about. One is talent, and talent is talent. And a person can go in and have an amazing career and be cast in something we do or somebody else does, and they're great, and there's no one like them. And the quote-unquote star quality, I don't know that I've ever discovered a true star. Maybe I have. I don't, one or two. But the screen sees them differently, and that's not in their control. That's how a camera sees them. So
what do you think that is?
I can't tell you, but you can recognize it. And sometimes that thing comes in the room and they don't get cast. You know, the camera sees something that the director doesn't, you know, and you can argue your way through it and you don't get your way. But it is, you know, it's a big screen thing. I think television is different, and everybody watching things on smaller screens changes it somewhat, I think. But in the past, it was really big screen. You can sense it.
It's a magic.
There are people that, it's like seeing models, you know, like you look at Paige's models or something, and someone says, you got to meet so-and-so, and they come in the room and you're like, where are they? They're like little mousy whatever, but the camera absolutely sees something else. They're just riveting to look at, you know.
It's just very interesting, because I remember thinking about that and trying to decipher whether it was like an extraordinary level of presence, you know, like a stage presence, and if that's the same thing, or if it has to do with symmetry or of a face, or the collaboration of the multiple elements of what it takes to make a film. But without a doubt, I don't know, I feel like you have a knack, you have a sharp eye, a keen eye for seeing that glimmer and discovering those people. Is that a rewarding, is that like, what's the most rewarding part of your job?
Yeah, you know, just job well done is rewarding. I mean, I, you know, I wish there were many other things I could say about it, but you know, when you know that you've truly contributed to something and then you see it and you're like, ah, okay. And the hope always is to be able to work with that director again, to make that, turn that one relationship into a relationship over time. You want, you know, it's a tricky business now. I think, you know, I guess I'm old school. You know, I think recognition is very important, but still at the end of the day, it's when you just have a good experience, like in anything, when you're heard.
When you're valued and listened to and appreciated.
Sure. Yeah. As in anything.
I wanted just to ask you some actory point of view questions, just to get your opinion on them. You did mention that right now you're doing that amazing sort of online general with actors, but if COVID never happened and we were back in February of 2020, how do you generally find new talent?
It depends. You know, like anyone else, you put out a breakdown. If I have, you know, if I've been given enough time, you see everyone who's right for the role. I mean, it just, you know, it's much of it is just about how much time you're given. And then you just really have to sift through it all. There are times when what you're looking for is so specific, you have to venture out and look for people, you know, and in theater or other avenues, call schools. We did a television show that has not been released, and they were very keen on having these actors be in high school. So there was a lot of outreach to schools in the city. And I went to see plays at some schools and had some of the funnest and funniest experiences, you know, just seeing school plays. So yeah, all different kinds of ways. We did a movie that was non-hearing, deaf, and you know, we had to go into the community to find people. In some cases they were actors, in some cases they weren't. For the most part they were. So any way you can.
It sounds like that could be a very time-consuming and involved detective process. And generally indie films don't have much financial resources. So right, you're doing this for the love of the craft, I guess.
Yeah, you have to, it's what I said at the beginning, what we spoke about in the beginning, if you love the script and you love the director and you love this or that, then you just have to do it until you get it right. You know, there are also times you're stuck in it and you don't want to be doing it.
Do you think actors, when they're in the beginning of their careers, there's kind of a debate about this, but do you think it's important for them to type themselves to say, I feel like I'm in a general category. So if I just focus on playing the villain, or if I just focus on playing the girl next door, that will get me in the door. And then I can always break that down later.
I have no answer to that question.
Because there are people that charge $250 for 30 minutes to tell you what that type is.
Yeah, I don't get that. You know, I don't get it. I don't. I understand that people who work quickly, you know, if somebody's playing a policeman, they want somebody who's already played the policeman. It makes it easier. You've already played the nurse. You can be the nurse. You know how to. But I don't understand. I personally just don't understand it. I'm not being flippant. I get what that is, but it doesn't. I don't.
Do you think it's different in New York, perhaps, than LA? You've cast out in LA.
Don't know. It's different. There are many more actors in LA, and it's a big business, you know, historically speaking. So it's a business. You know, it's different. I think here it's still a business here, but I think we're a smaller community of people. You know, you go to theater, you will go out and drink with actors or go have a meal. You know, it's just a smaller community.
Well, that always brings up the question of whether people should stay in New York or stay in LA or go to the other coast or keep their connections, or, you know, it's just, there's so many people trying to break in. It's so oversaturated. I mean, is it true that like a co-star or even a small role in one of your films will get thousands of submissions?
No, but certainly the leads are, you know, if it's something really good and or people are interested in it, it can be thousands of submissions. Absolutely. You know, it can be hundreds or 100. But then again, sometimes what we're looking for is so crazily specific that you'll get like 5 submissions. Then you have to go out and really try to find it, because more often than not, those 5 people aren't right.
I feel like part of what in terms of like the less specific roles, I guess, is it forces actors to not only have to be talented, of course, and hopefully have good reps, but to be creative in the room or in their self-tapes. And I was wondering if you had any examples of people who have maybe come in or put a self-tape together that was innovative or caught your attention outside of the sort of run-of-the-mill auditions that came in.
There are 2 examples that come to mind, and one didn't work because we were like, what is this? Like, this is so many different kinds of wrong. And for someone else did one equally as nutty, and it absolutely 100% worked. So it really, and both of them, it's weird. The one that didn't work may have been made by somebody who was told that it would. And the other one was probably like, oh, what's happening? And then you got through it and you were completely sold. I sort of almost, you know, I they're anecdotes and I do talk about them occasionally. You know, one was a person basically just made the movie in their head, the movie that they thought that they wanted to be in. And you show that to a director and the director's like, what? You know, I'm the director. I don't want to see that. And the other one was just the first 30 seconds at least, it may have been more, was this person sitting in the rain smoking a cigarette, which had nothing to do kind of with anything. And you're like watching and you're like, uh-oh, like something bad's happening. And you kind of stay with it though, because it's so crazy. And then I don't even want to get into what it turned into, because again, it was still not something an actor would do. And then it just seamlessly went into the scene from that middle part. And by the end of it, you were like, this is mad genius. I still don't know what the cigarette part in the rain was about, but it set a tone.
Exactly. So I don't know. I guess if you, I don't know. It sounds like you are more a fan of the traditional way, unless you get these crazy sort of auditions that are so genuine and so committed and so truthful, and that makes them work. But if you're trying to force things or weird to be weird for weird's sake, like it isn't gonna happen.
The problem with self-tapes, I feel for you guys often, is that you start to be in control of them. And the problem with that is you don't really know what that is. Like, you're controlling them for you, but you don't really know what it is that I'm looking for necessarily. And so the sparkly, oh, that thing just happened in the room thing isn't there because you've like beaten it, the audition, into submission. So while it's a good self-tape, it doesn't have life to it. And I think at the end of the day, it still has to, sometimes I don't mind if that, I know you should, I know that you guys have to, you have to watch them. You can't just send them to us. I mean, that's the funniest one. Ones where like you get them in the self-tape, like the person's down here and it's like, wait a minute, they didn't even look at this thing. Like,
for the record, like, Susan has her head under the desk.
There are those things, you can't even see their face, or you know, it's just like crazy town. And you don't want to do that. You want to watch them, but you do want to, but I'm the wrong person to ask, because I, generally speaking, they don't work for me 100%.
Do you feel that actors should be proactively trying to get representation as soon as they get out of a training program?
You know, this year's so wildly different and the whole system is slightly off its axis. So I think it's helpful to have representation. I think it's important. And I also think it's important that if you don't, to try to get work. I mean, the relationships are really casting directors and actors, directors and actors, writers and actors, you know, certainly in New York, writers, directors, small theaters, being proactive in that way. In LA, I know it's slightly different because you don't have a wide world of that. So it's web stuff, and you know, you can make your own show and you know, whatever. And people do watch that stuff. I mean, I know people in LA, casting directors I know in LA, do watch those web series. That's their form of off-Broadway theater. And I think, again, the relationship, it's important to have an agent because they have access, they have more access. But also we, you know, casting directors are going to call you in if they respond to you. It's that simple. They don't care if you have an agent or not.
How can actors, I guess, be more in the driver's seat in that regard? Waiting for someone to see you in a play or whatever can be a long shot. So yeah. Would you theoretically be against an actor saying, hey, somehow I heard you were casting a role and I think I might be right for this. Here's my website and my reel and resume are on there.
You know, somebody asked a casting director I know that a couple of weeks ago, we were doing a Zoom thing, and the casting director said something really interesting. She said, look, if you have to be in this thing and you know about it, and you also know that you're right for it, it isn't just that you want to be in this thing, but that this is a role, then it is okay to email or to send a card or whatever, to be proactive. But if you're just doing it to do it because it becomes too much, people don't go through stuff like that. It's hard. Even now, sitting in my house every day for X amount of months, I still get a lot of emails and I don't look at half of them. It's just too, it becomes too much. I'm not saying I get a lot of emails from actors. I'm just saying, you know, we have a lot to go through and
it's normal. It's brain drain. But if you, in other words, be smart about it, use a laser instead of a shotgun approach. Don't be afraid to go for things you really feel you're absolutely right for, but don't waste people's time being general.
Right.
Okay. The question I forgot, I want to go back to quickly, just on the self-tapes. Do you want actors, whether you say it in the instructions or not, to always give you two different takes?
I do. And then if there's an inkling of something, or if somebody even looks like they could be the person, then you can take it from there. You can ask to redo it, or it's fine as it is. Oftentimes they're fine the way they are. If the person's really right for the role, it's what it is.
So this is a little tangential, but your husband is an actor, a wonderful actor, who I've had the pleasure to see live on stage. Not necessarily you speaking for him, but you've been in the business a while. And what do you think is the key to having longevity and a career as an actor in this business?
You know, I think longevity is that you just do the work. Is that, you know, I think when you start to chase things, longevity is being good in your job. And some people are become very successful and they know how to hold on to that success. And it may mean lean times, but they know how to hold on. And the world that we're in New York is just doing the work. And, you know, people find you. I the guy I'm married to is also the head of an acting program at a university, you know, at a conservatory. So he is, you know, people still ask him to do things. I think it's just having a body of work behind you. You just move through it.
And marry any single casting director you can find.
Yeah. If anything, I destroyed his career. So, so there you go.
No. I just want to transition a little bit into just casting process, and for perhaps aspiring casting directors out there, what are some frequent misconceptions about casting?
I think that often the misconception with young actors starting out is that we hold all the cards, like everything that happens is because we did it. And, you know, there are a lot of people who make decisions on movies, and there are a lot of reasons why people don't get parts. So that's one misconception. The other misconception is almost polar opposite, is like, yeah, and you said it earlier, yeah, you can come in and not get the part, and then you go away and you don't hear from us. And then a year from now, we're like, you know what, you're perfect for this, you must come in. And that happens. That happens more than it doesn't. So the misconception that you're forgotten if you don't get the part. You know, there are actors, there are casting directors who I talk with or I know, and they'll talk about specifically, I bring so-and-so in, you know, project after project, and they don't get it, and they don't get, but I'm going to keep bringing him or her in, and then it clicks, and then they get the job. So I think you all make us look good, so we're not the enemy.
Yeah, if anything, we're more alike, I think, casting directors and actors than any other sides of the industry. We're supporting each other, and we're both employed by the producers and the, you know, production companies. So yeah, just to remember we're allies in that and keep the faith. And if you are an aspiring casting director, how do you, there is a very clear linear pathway of being an assistant and an associate and learning the ropes through that process. Did you do that?
My trajectory was different. It's too long a story. I did work for someone at one point, yes, until she closed down her office. And what I learned from her was how to recognize acting. She did a lot of theater, and so the scripts were, you know, it was about the text. And so I learned how to watch actors who were good. I mean, the people that came through her office, it was unbelievable.
So that feels like a very essential part of the experience. I mean, you have to have the skill sets, but like, what was the marker of you feeling comfortable going out on your own? And how do up and coming casting directors build relationships with filmmakers?
The NYU films, the grad films, those are much more prevalent than they were then. And I think that's how a young casting director hopefully can build relationships. You know, you get asked to do these things, do them. You know, the business is different now. It wasn't anything I thought about. It was just something I sort of fell into. So when you asked me, how did you go out on your own? I just, at some point I was like, okay, well, I don't want to keep working in this store and casting by night. It looks like I'm making a living. I guess I'll just do this. You know, now it's a business, and I don't know enough about how it works in that way now. I think, you know, I don't know how to answer it. I feel like it's different now, and I can't.
Okay. Do you have any resources that could be books, could be interviews, could be even just films or pieces of music that you think would be useful, things that have inspired you, just generally speaking?
I have a whole friggin' list.
Can we?
It's got hundreds and hundreds of things on it. I often say, I mean, you know, if anyone's heard me speak, they've probably heard me say this before, but I do think it's a bit like painting. And I do love to go to museums, and I like to look at paintings. And it's kind of for that reason. It's that these, you know, textures and colors and whatever make the piece. And casting has to look at individuals and think of it as a whole. So that's something I would tell actors to look at go to museums. There are a lot of books. I'm an avid reader. You know, I read all the time, so I can't be specific. Everything I read has something in it. The imagination lives between the words. And I think it's important for actors to read because of it. Yeah. And not being afraid to be wrong. Because like I say, it's the imagination. It's not wrong or right. It's different or doesn't fit this thing, but.
Well, yeah, something you've always said and really stuck with me is you've got to have your own interesting life. You have to be well-rounded. You have to be cultured and open to everything because it's all going to be your well that you are able to draw from.
Absolutely. You know, actors who have full resonating selves, lives, you know, there's a bit of mystery that walks in the room with them and you become kind of curious, you know, how they interpret a role becomes super interesting.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten?
Stop talking, listen, maybe. You know, always wear something fabulous so you don't look like you need the job. I don't know. Stuff like that. Just weird, rando stuff.
Well, that's definitely true for you. You've lived that fully. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming and
my pleasure.
Stay healthy. And that's a wrap on Susan Shopmaker. Thank you so much, everyone, for giving us a listen. We hope you learned something and enjoyed this chat. And if you did, don't forget to share your love with us on social media. Give us a share. Give us a follow at Movie Mentors Podcast on Instagram or on our Facebook page or both. I'd also like to thank Gabe Sokoloff for the music and wish you all good health and happiness. Talk soon.